One of the best business decisions I've ever made is to start a podcast. Nothing builds trust and gets people wanting to buy from you more than a podcast. But if no one is listening, then you're just wasting your precious time. In today's show, we're going over the four ladder rungs you need in order to see exponential growth with a podcast. So if you've been thinking about starting a podcast, you can use this episode to work your way up the ladder and succeed from the start. Or if you already have a podcast, but downloads are low or not growing, I promise you that if you follow this framework, you will break through your plateau and make more sales of your product.
Regular people are taking their knowledge and content, packaging it up in an online course, and they're making a living doing it. But not everyone is successful with online courses. There's a right way and there's a wrong way, and I'm here to help course creators actually succeed with online courses. Hi, I'm Jacques Hopkins, and this is the Online Course Show.
Hey everyone, it's Jacques Hopkins, and welcome to the Online Course Show. This is the show where we talk about not just courses, but course businesses. The difference is one makes money and one doesn't. We help you to set up the entire business so you can make the money you want to from your course, have the impact on others that you want, and have the freedom and lifestyle that you want. And one piece in the business is building an audience and generating traffic. And that's the piece we're talking about today. We're talking about doing that with a podcast. If you already have a podcast and you want to grow it, then this episode is absolutely perfect for you. And if you don't have a podcast, you'll learn if it might be just the perfect way for you to grow your audience within your niche. And if so, exactly the steps to do to get there. My guest today is an absolute wizard when it comes to podcasting. His name is Kevin Schmidlin, and you may know him as the host of the Grow the Show podcast. In this episode, Kevin holds nothing back and shares all his best tips for starting and growing a podcast. He's got this insanely valuable framework of the four ladder rungs that has helped me grow my own podcast. And what you're about to hear is absolutely the best podcast instruction that I have come across in the past 7 years since I launched my own podcast. So with that, let's get into it. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the Online Course Show.
Jacques, it is my absolute honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure, man. I'm glad we could make this work. So we talk a lot about selecting your niche, how important that is on this podcast. You have selected podcasting itself as your niche. Let's start with just kind of some backstory of how that ended up happening for you.
Yeah, so I'll take it back to early 2018. At that point in time, I was a low-level software developer at a big health insurance company. I was not super passionate about either health insurance or software, but I was super passionate about my hometown, which is Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And so it was in 2018 that I discovered podcasts as a listener. And I was listening to shows like Startup and How I Built This with Guy Raz, and shows that were like really, really highly produced storytelling shows. And at the same time, I was super, and still am, super passionate about Philly. And so I thought, you know what? I want to start a podcast that interviews and tells the stories of successful Philadelphians. So I did that. I took a couple months, you know, did what most people do, used YouTube to learn how to, you know, how to record, how to get a, you know, RSS feed and all that stuff. Launched the show in May of 2018. It did pretty well on day one. It got about 250 downloads on its first day, which I didn't know at the time is actually kind of impressive for someone who didn't have any audience or background in it. And I can talk about how I accidentally made that happen. But it went well. A couple weeks went by. There was a lot of buzz about the show. And the whole time, my whole 4 years of my career so far, I really wanted to be an entrepreneur. I had all these side hustles that I had tried doing that didn't work out. And so I had some savings and I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. So I gave notice. It was like just a few weeks after the podcast launch. By the way, I don't recommend this. I don't recommend anybody do this. Ill-advised. But I was just so pumped about the perspective of being a podcast entrepreneur. I did the thing. I left the job. So I had a lot of fun that summer, spent the summer interviewing people. I would spend all day editing podcast episodes. And it was really fun until it wasn't. So just 6 months after launching the show, I was completely out of savings. The show got some initial buzz, but it wasn't really growing. I was getting the same like amount of downloads each and every episode. It was like a couple hundred, and the downloads were actually going down a little bit. I was doing everything that I thought you have to do to grow a show on the internet. Like I was posting audiograms and stuff like that, but the show wasn't growing, and it certainly, I had no idea how I was going to make any money. So a couple more months went by, didn't have any money, went into a little bit of debt. I actually pulled out my phone to like call my old boss and ask for my job back. But I had made such a big stink to everybody in my life that I was this new entrepreneur now that I just really did not want to go back to the full-time job. So I actually broke the almighty consistency rule. I did what every podcaster is told never to do. I stopped publishing and I took 6 weeks to just like study. I was like, look, I'm spending all of my time cranking out episodes of this show. It's not growing. I don't know how to make money. So all of that time is really not going towards anything. So let me just take a pause and see if I can just take some time and learn what successful podcasters do. So that's what I did. It was like a 6 week period. I took one weekend and listened to every single podcast in the top 100 charts to just hear like, what are they doing? How are they monetized? Like, what do their episodes sound like? Read some books, got in touch with some big name podcasters to ask some advice, went to a conference, took some courses, just like tried to just absorb as much as I could. And what I learned is that the internet is very good at teaching you how to launch a podcast, right? You can Google it. It's all there. Here's how the mic works. Here's how you get, you know, your podcast feed on every platform. But it's not very good at teaching you how to grow a podcast. And what I found is that that's because most of the advice on how to grow a podcast comes from people who haven't actually grown podcasts themselves. They've launched podcasts. They are successful podcast launchers, but most of them really don't have direct experience growing a show. So once I kind of saw what's different about the shows that grow, I brought my podcast back. And within about a year, it had generated more than 100,000 downloads. And I had gotten about 120K in revenue from the show. And so that was 2019. It was a great year for me. I just made the show. It was monetized in several different ways. I was traveling around. It was awesome. 4-hour work week life to the max. And then once COVID hit and I couldn't travel around and do those things, I found myself every single day talking with podcasters who were like, how did you do this? How did you do this? How did you do this? And then by like the 30th one-on-one call where I started, like I was telling them the same things, like here's how you grow, you got to fix this, here's how you make money. I was like, okay, I think there's opportunity here for a little bit of a bigger impact. And that's where Grow the Show was born. And since then, I launched Grow the Show in 2020. It's been about 4 years. Literally, I actually left home. So I moved away from home to just focus 100% on the business. And literally every single day of my life since then has been about how do I help people grow their shows? How do we grow podcasts? How do we make more money from them? And that is all that I do.
That's an incredible story, man. You know, I mentioned that we talk about niching down quite a bit, and I talk about how you've got your broad niche and then your specific niche. So for you, your broad niche is podcasting, but it sounds like you didn't stop there. You're not just helping everybody in the podcasting space. You found a gap in the market of people that already have started and are looking to grow. So that's really incredible. One thing that just like stuck out to me right from the very beginning when I found your podcast is how incredible your brand name is. It's like absolutely perfect. Like, was it one of those moments where you like came up with it and were like crossing your fingers that the domain was available?
Did you hear me? Have you heard me talk about this? Because that's literally exactly what happened. That's hilarious.
No, I have not. So,
literally, it was in this period when I was like, I think I'm going to launch what I call a podcast accelerator. Like it's going to be a program. And I can remember it right now. I was taking a shower in the evening after working out. I had a gym in my basement in Philly. And literally, I was like, grow the show. Oh my God, it rhymes. And literally, I got out of the shower, dried off really quick, ran to my computer in a towel and went on GoDaddy and looked growtheshow.com. It was available. And that now, and it's mine.
That's amazing. I absolutely love it. I had a similar experience in 2013 when I came up with the idea for my piano brand. Except it was Piano in 30 Days. And so I go and I check and it was taken. Piano in 30 Days was taken. So I had to modify. Fortunately, it was a number that I could just tweak and I settled in on 21, which was, of course, available.
Amazing. Well, even better. You're not going to do 40 days, right? Let's make it shorter.
Let's go shorter. Yeah. And to be honest with you, I couldn't even come up with 30 days of content. 21 ended up being perfect.
Awesome.
So can you kind of talk me through just like the state of podcasting right now here in 2024? I launched mine back in 2017. I probably have it studied and taken all the courses and things that you have. So what is the state? Are podcasts still growing? And what do you see going forward for podcasts as well?
Totally. So To my dismay, it has changed a lot since I launched Grow the Show in 2020. Like the tactics that I taught then are very different than what works now. And I just learned that that's just marketing, right? Like what's working changes with time. And you know, things that work, once everybody finds out about them, stop working because everybody's doing them. So like, as I said, to my dismay, I tease, I love figuring out what's working and, you know, sharing the latest and greatest, but I'm like, man, I really need to relearn this every single year and just stay on top of things. So as far as what's happening now in 2024, like how are podcasts growing? There's a lot of negative mindset around in the podcast world right now because podcasting had a huge peak in 2020 during COVID because a lot of people launched podcasts. So that's kind of when the gold rush, quote unquote, of podcasting really peaked. And I think I saw a stat, and I won't be able to get the number exact, and I don't even know the source, so I can look it up if you want to share the link in the show notes at some point. But that in 2022, there were fewer new podcasts or fewer active podcasts than in 2018. So it had actually rebounded because what happened? Everybody now knows what a podcast is. I think 2015 through 2020 was the 5 years where people were just finding out that podcasts exist. 2020, 2021, everyone's like, you know what? I'm going to try this thing because they thought it's just, I just turn on a microphone and talk and then I get an audience, right? It's just this incredible, easy thing. Most people found out that it's actually not that easy. Most people quit. So what does that mean for today? Well, on one hand, it's a good thing actually, because there's less competition than you think. Like everyone thinks that podcasting is super saturated, right? You know, if I remember in 2018, people were like, don't you think it's a little late to start a podcast? But I know for sure people are saying that now. They're like, don't you think it's a little late to start a podcast? But actually, because the market has peaked, the supply of shows has peaked and there's fewer shows available now, the competition has gone down in a sense. There's fewer shows than there were in 2020, 2021, which is a good thing. The challenge though, is that the shows that are around tend to have higher budgets, right? They tend to be a little bit more mature. And then just lo-fi, like, I mean, there was a time where you could just grab a microphone, put out audio content, and that was that. Like, a show would grow. That's not the case anymore. And so what I found now is that you have to have some sort of marketing strategy. And for most of us, most people that I talk to, because I have niched down since 2020, where I speak mainly more to business and personal development shows now than like entertainment podcasts. And what I say is like, look, it sounds counterintuitive, but we have to market our marketing, right? We have to understand how to market our podcast, how to make it so that people find out that we and our show exists before they're going to be willing to give you 45 minutes of time. So it's totally doable. And there's strategies that are working today, but what's different and what people need to understand about podcasting in 2024 is that, in my opinion, the days where you solely have an audio podcast and that is the only thing that you put out there and that audience grows and, like, you know, provides a business, I think those days are over. I think it's better to now consider your podcast as a part of your content ecosystem, which doesn't have to be too crazy. We don't have to repurpose on every single platform like everybody is saying. You don't have to be on YouTube like everybody is saying, but there does have to be something else that helps for you, that helps you, the podcaster, to get discovered and get known.
That's really interesting coming from a guy who, you know, you specialize in podcasting. So if somebody is either looking to start an online course business or they have a course, but they haven't really built their audience yet, they're looking for ways to sell it. Is podcasting still a good way to go for that type of person?
100%. But here's the difference. And I'll tell a quick story. So when I launched Grow the Show in June of 2020, I actually didn't launch the Grow the Show podcast then. And that's what I'm most known for, because of course I'm the podcast guy. Why wouldn't I have a podcast? And you would think I would have had that thought when I launched the business, right? But nope, that's not what I thought. So when I launched Grow the Show in June of 2020, it was just an accelerator program. It was just a coaching program. That's all it was. And so there was no like online content presence, super ironically. And the way that I aimed to get new clients and customers to that program was, I just got on discovery calls with podcasters because I was able to get in touch with tons and tons of podcasters. And so there was a period of time, July, August, September, and October 2020, 4 whole months, where I was personally getting on 6 to 12 discovery calls with podcasters who had already launched and wanted to grow every single day. And it was one of the most stressful time periods of my life. I was like getting tested for sleep apnea. I later found out I was just overstressed. And I was so stressed because I was spending all my time on these discovery calls, trying to get people to, you know, buy my program, right, to work with me, to hire me as their podcast coach. And everybody was telling me to pound sand except for five people, my five OGs. To this day, I love you all. You know who you are. Those five people took a chance on me, joined the program, got great results. But it wasn't until October of 2020, when I launched the Grow the Show podcast, that things really took off. And just 4 months after launching the Grow the Show podcast, my business was doing 50K per month. And it hasn't really looked back since then. And now it does more than that. So the difference, and this is what addresses your question, why it should, you know, should online course creators consider having a podcast? I absolutely believe so. Of course, I'm a little biased, but here's why. The reason why my business exploded after I launched the Grow the Show podcast is because before I had a little bit of a social media presence, sure, but I was just getting on the phone with people and they had no idea who I was. And within 15 to 30 minutes, I was asking them to hire me. And they'd be like, I don't know who this guy is, right? I don't know if this person knows what he's talking about. Once I launched the Grow the Show podcast, I was able to take all those people that I could get in touch with. Instead of saying, hop on the phone with me, I would just direct them to the show. And on the podcast, yes, I did interview other people, but I would also publish solo episodes where I would just share a story, share a framework, share a tactic, and be like, hey, if you're looking to grow, if you're looking to make a better show, if you're looking to monetize, here's what we're going to talk about today. And in the solo episode, just rip it, right? Here's what you need to do. And it was then that people started reaching out, being like, oh my gosh, I need to hire you. I need to work with you. And so the difference was that, and in my opinion, there is no better lead nurturing mechanism than a podcast, in my opinion, meaning a means for people who find out about you, but really don't know, you know, what you're about, if you, you know, really know what you're talking about, to understand that you really do know what you're talking about. And to this day, the solo episodes of Grow the Show are the ones that drive sales for my business the most. So it's for that reason that, like, yes, we do have to talk about how do we get people to discover the podcast, right? There are other things that we need to do to make that happen. But to this day, as I said, I just haven't found another way to nurture leads and make it so that when they're ready to buy, you were the first person that they call or sign up with.
My experience aligns perfectly with what you're describing. When I started my first online business in 2013 teaching piano, eventually I realized, you know, other than making a course, I had to figure out a way for people to discover who I am, build an audience, and start building that trust. A podcast certainly was not on my radar, mostly because of the niche I was in. It's kind of hard to like teach piano with just audio, you know? So I started a YouTube channel and that worked really well. Yeah. And then when I started this brand in 2017, I was like, hey, podcast, we're talking business strategy, we're talking digital products. That does work really well with audio. And the amount of trust you build with your audience, or at least from my experience, has been insane. You know, I'll jump on a call with somebody, maybe thinking about joining one of my programs. And so often people are just like, man, it's so surreal to talk to you. I've just totally listened to you for hours and hours and hours. I can't believe I'm like speaking with you. And they feel like they know me so well.
Totally.
It's an incredible platform when done right. That's been from my experience as well. But you mentioned that there's so much content out there on starting podcasts. There's a lot of free courses. There's a lot of paid courses. You help people specifically grow who are stagnating. I'm not a podcast expert. I have one that's done reasonably well. When people ask me what the best way to grow a podcast is, I can just tell them from my experience. My experience has been appearing on other podcasts.
Yeah.
Is that still the best strategy to grow a show in 2024?
So it's one of the three strategies that I'm seeing that are really working the best right now. And so there's three of them. However, there's a couple things that most podcasters that I come across whose show isn't growing, it's a problem that they have and they don't realize that they have it. So we can go into growth strategies, but what I found is that the first thing to do to grow a show is to make a couple adjustments to the show itself first. Do you mind if I kind of outline what that is before we talk?
Please.
Brass tacks. Awesome. So, you know, from doing this over the past 4 years, 6 years really, what I see is that there's really four levels. There's four checkpoints that you want to hit to get to a place where your podcast is growing each and every week, that every time that you publish new episodes, the number goes up and up for the most part. And also the podcast is generating revenue, right? And so for the folks that hear my voice right now, that's mainly course sales. And growth is level three. But what I found is that most podcasters have issues with levels one and two, and it's like a ladder where if you just focus on three, but you haven't, like if you try to step up a ladder and you try to take your first step on step three, you're probably going down, right? So the first two levels of what I call the podcast ladder, level one is what I call having a clear, unique premise, a clear, unique premise. And it's not 100% about niching down, because we talk, right, people like us online talk about this all the time. You got to niche down. You got to niche down sometimes. But if your podcast is not growing, that doesn't necessarily mean that you need to niche down. What it probably means is that first, the question is this: how is your show unique, right? Is it another 45-minute interview show interviewing successful entrepreneurs, right? And number two, is it clear? Is it clear who the show is for and what they're going to get out of it? And this was the number one mistake that I see, where podcasters have their show and it's just super vague. It's just not like, when you look at it immediately without the podcaster being there to tell you, oh, this is what I do on the show. When you just look at it and it's like a vague name, or it's like some clever name that like is some sort of pun that you just don't get right away. And if I read the description, I don't know, like, what is this show going to do for me if I listen to it every single week? Then I'm not listening. I'm not tuning in. And so most podcasters don't actually realize how many people see their show, don't really get what it is, and move on and don't ever listen to an episode. So that's level one, is having a clear, unique premise. And I don't know, do you want to, like, I can talk more about that, or I can talk about number two?
Well, you know, sometimes I selfishly just think about this and I want to be coached by the person I'm talking to right now. So, yeah. You know, as you're saying this, I'm thinking specifically about my podcast. You know, I've selected the name as The Online Course Show. We talk about all things online courses. And I mean, it really is like a niche thing. We're not talking about just general online business or anything like that. It's very specific for online courses. But then you mentioned, like, you don't want it to be just a generic 45-minute interview. And like, pretty much all of our episodes are like intro. We have the 60-minute interview, outro, maybe a call to action, and that's it. I mean, is there specific things, for example, I could do to spruce things up or make it more unique?
So you're good. You'll be glad to know you're set. We don't have to change anything by your premise. And I would say that the success of your show proves that to be true. Because here's the thing: if your podcast has already grown, like, to a significant amount, that means you've got level one mostly intact. I'm talking to the shows that are at what I call the friends and family zone, where they are publishing episodes every week and they're getting 50 to 200 downloads an episode. That's mainly just your inner circle of human beings that knows you personally that are tuning in. It's generally not strangers for the most part. And that's what you want. Like, if your podcast is growing, strangers are tuning in and you don't know who they are and you don't know how they found the show, and they're listening and they're getting great value and they're eventually buying your courses. So I'll just give you one example of a really high level entrepreneur that I'm working with right now. She owns a service business that does bookkeeping services for entrepreneurs. And she came to me and she's like, I've got this show, and what I want to do with the show is I want to help entrepreneurs learn how to understand their bookkeeping numbers, because all the time my company, you know, provides entrepreneurs with their books, right, with their profit and loss and all those statements, and they have no idea what to do with those numbers other than use them to file taxes. And meanwhile, these entrepreneurs are also making horrible mistakes in their business. So this client, her name is Danielle, she said, I want to make this show so that I can teach entrepreneurs how to read their numbers and use those numbers to make great business decisions, right? Instead of making decisions emotionally. Now, you and I right now are like, that actually sounds really good. I might need to check out that show, right? where do I find it? But here's the thing. I said, okay, great. Danielle, what's the show called? She said, it's called Entrepreneur Money Stories, where we interview entrepreneurs about their money mindset. What? And I'm sure Danielle would have no problem with me sharing this with her right now, with everybody. But like, if you weren't me talking one-on-one with Danielle, the CEO who knows what the heck she's talking about and has all these frameworks for how we can make better decisions, if you weren't me then, and I'm like, I got to listen to that show. Instead, you just saw this Entrepreneur Money Stories where Danielle Hayden interviews entrepreneurs. You'd be like, oh man, I don't know. What are we going to hear? How these people like learned how to be abundant, right? That's not going to do anything for me. So we rebranded the show. We didn't really change much about the content at all. She's still interviewing great entrepreneurs. She's still doing solo episodes, but now it's called Business by the Books, the podcast that teaches entrepreneurs how to use their numbers to make great business decisions. I'm in, right? I bet you're in. You're going to go look that up, right? So that's the difference between a clear and unique premise, where right away you're like, whoa, I need that, and the opposite of that, which is a vague copycat premise. And those premises, the vague copycat ones, really don't get reach, despite the fact that there's often an amazing show hiding underneath the poorly worded premise. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. And I love your concept of the three rungs of the ladder. Are we still at rung one right now?
This is rung one. So once okay. once you have that locked in, you have a clear, unique premise where it's clear who the show is for, what the show is going to do for them, not what you're going to do, not I'm going to interview people. It's what are these interviews going to do for the listener? What is the listener going to get from these interviews? And the format, right? How is it going to do it? Once you have that lined up, then we move on to level two. Every podcaster thinks they have a problem growing the show. They have a problem getting more listeners. In actuality, what I found is that most of the time, the podcaster gets new listeners way more than they realize. The problem is they don't know how to keep listeners, right? So they look at their metrics, their podcast metrics, they fire up their downloads and they see, I get 100 downloads every single week. What the heck? I've got these 100 people, but why can't I get more people to tune in? Ah, you actually are getting new people to tune in. The problem is every week you get 80 new listeners, but those 80 listeners don't come back next week. And so the next week you get 80 new listeners. And then the next week you get 80 new listeners. And while it looks like your audience is stagnant, really there's just a massive hole in it. And so before you know how to keep listeners, it's like your podcast is like a, it's like trying to fill a wicker basket with water, right? You're like, I got the best faucet in the world. I've got like three hoses trying to fill this thing, but the water level just won't rise. What you don't see is that the water is all trickling out of the bottom. When you learn how to keep listeners, your podcast becomes a steel bucket, right? Where every drop stays put. And then you don't need an extra faucet. The level's going up every single month. So once podcasters learn how to keep listeners, oftentimes they don't have to change anything about their growth strategies and their water level begins to rise. They start to see the numbers go up. And there's one example of that that's really, really crazy. I worked with this guy named Nate. He came to me. His show was at 12,000 downloads per month. Super impressive, right? Really good. But he had maxed out every way you could grow a podcast. He was showing up on other shows. He was doing YouTube. He was doing short form videos on social media. He was even running paid ads to the podcast. But the problem is, and here's the difference. When you pressed play on his episodes, it was like, what's up, everyone? You're listening to Low Carb Hustle. I'm here with my boy, Juicy Cheeks. Juicy Cheeks, how was your week? And I'm like, who's Juicy Cheeks? Who are you? You haven't said your name. I don't care about Juicy Cheeks' week. What are we doing here? And so like, it was painful to listen to the first 30 seconds of that podcast episode. And so Nate, what a great case study. I said, Nate, we got to fix your intros, man. Like, these are brutal. I promise you, nobody's going to keep listening to this show. He had great content about how to live a low carb lifestyle and have a lower body fat percentage. That's what his show is about. He had the clear, unique premise. We fixed his intro and I taught him how to capture and hold attention within the podcast episode, right? Which, spoiler alert, the first 30 to 60 seconds of every podcast episode, you have one job as the host. And that is to convince the listener to listen to the rest of the episode. What is in it for them? Why is it going to be the best decision that they make today? Nate made this adjustment. Within 3 months, his show had tripled to $36,000 a month. Within 6 months, he was at $75,000 a month. And all he changed was his intros. It was crazy. Wow. So he had a huge hole in the bucket. We were able to plug the hole. And then all of those growth strategies that he was doing started to finally work. So that's why I wanted to cover levels one and two first, because a lot of times those are the big hidden problems that podcasters have. And they think that I got to find a different growth strategy, when really we just need to learn how to capture and hold attention better before we turn to growth.
Did you say Juicy Cheeks?
Juicy Cheeks. I still don't know who Juicy Cheeks is. So Nate, if you hear this, please shoot me a text and fill me in.
That's a great case study there of the improvement. Look, I'll be honest with you, Kevin, one of the takeaways that I've gotten from listening to your podcast, one thing, not just takeaway, but actions that I've taken is similar to what you're talking about. Even as recently as like 15 episodes ago, we would just jump straight into like our intro bumper music with me talking. Yeah. Like that's the normal intro 20 seconds. And then I start getting into the episode. And one thing I changed was, before any of that happens, I'll spend 30 to 40 seconds before all of that, right at the beginning, just really hooking people into the episode. So for example, yesterday I interviewed a girl in Japan who has an incredibly successful online course business, but yet has an extremely small audience. She's got 3,000 followers on YouTube and her email list is 330 people, And she has a six-figure a year course business. Unbelievable. And so before, I would have just like, we'd play the bumper and then I'd be, you know, all casual. I used to have a co-host. I probably would have asked him how his week was going.
Yep.
But I recorded the intro right when I got off the call with her yesterday. And I was like, are you worried that your audience isn't big enough to be successful with an online course? Do you only have a couple of hundred people on your email list and are worried that that's not big enough? Well, stay tuned because my guest today is making six figures a year with an email list of only 300 people, something like that, right?
Yep.
And so I appreciate that advice and I can totally see why that's so much better.
Totally, 100%. And what you utilize there is what's called the pain agitate solution framework. So that's the little hack, you know, listeners can take away is like, if you're not sure what to do in the intro, it's just call out a pain. So do you have a really small audience and you're worried you're never going to sell your course? Agitate it a little bit. Are you thinking about giving up on your course altogether? And then you can paint a vision. Well, today we're talking with someone who has just 300 people on their email list and they're making six figures a year. The solution is this episode. Stick around and you're going to learn how to do it as well. Boom, really fast. Now listeners are hooked, right? That's what Pat Flynn, our buddy Pat Flynn, calls the magic moment where listeners, because the thing is when podcast listeners turn on a show, turn on an episode, they've got their phone out, they press play. And what they're doing for the first few seconds is they're like, I don't know. Is this really what I want to listen to? I don't know. Joe Rogan's got a new episode. Maybe I should listen to that. Elon Musk on. Never mind. I'm going to go listen to Joe. But instead, if you're able to immediately do what you just did and say, hey, grab him by the lapels, right? And be like, this is why you need to hear this episode. This is what you're going to get out of it. Then what Pat Flynn calls the magic moment happens. Their phone goes away. They're like, oh my gosh, yes, I can't wait for this. And at that point, you've got more leeway than any other type of media. Because at that point, their phone's away, they're doing something. They're driving, they're in the squat rack, they're out for a walk, right? They're going to be doing something else with their hands. And so you have so much more ability to go into nuance and go into details before you lose their attention, which is great. But you gotta win their attention first.
And then one more follow-up here. You mentioned we've got to keep listeners. Maybe people are discovering us, but they're not sticking around. And so just because your numbers are stagnating doesn't mean we're not getting new people. They might just be dripping out of the bottom of that open basket. Yeah. Does that mean that people are not, like they're not getting hooked in and they're not listening to the episodes, or they listen to one, but they don't come back and listen to more?
Yeah, so great question. And what you're getting to is two different types of retention. There's episode retention, which is best measured by what's called completion rate. So if you go into your Apple analytics or your Spotify analytics, they will show you for each episode a graph of exactly how much of your episode listeners listened to on average. What I recommend interview shows shoot for is a 65% completion rate. And for your solo episodes, you really want to see above 80%. And that means that, you know, for the guest episodes, your listeners are on average completing 65% of the episode. For shows that don't have good intros, that don't do a great job of hooking people in, they'll have much lower completion rates. They're seeing 20%, 30%, 40%. And what you see is a huge slice at the beginning. You can literally see people turning off the episode. So that's on an episode level. I always go and solve that first anytime I work with a podcaster or help a podcaster out, because high episode completion rates is an indicator that you will have show retention rates, meaning that you're going to have listeners coming back and listening to each and every episode, or at least most of them, right? If you have issues with show churn, that's kind of a little bit of a horse of a different color. That happens when you're covering too many disparate topics on your show. Like one episode we're talking about, you know, how to get out of debt. The next episode we're talking about how to save for college. And it's like, is your audience all both trying to get out of debt and trying to save for college? Probably not. So, you know, people aren't going to be interested in all of your episodes. So that's a whole, like I said, a whole nother can of worms. But what I found is that shows that achieve really great completion rate tend to also have really great show retention. And if you think about it, it makes sense. They put out an episode. If people listen to the whole thing, that means it was good, and they're probably going to come back next week.
I think when we get off this call, that's probably the first thing I'm going to go look at is some of these completion rates, because all I look at is download numbers.
This is one of the things that way back in the beginning I didn't understand, but that I would learn, is that completion rate, in my opinion, is the vital sign of a podcast. And if your completion rates are low, I don't even talk to me about growth. We have to get those up first, because that means that we're not putting out a show that people press that people stick around to, first of all. And also, sometimes people have low completion rates. They have a great intro, but people still just like the whole time are leaving the episode. And that tends to mean that either the episode was too boring, or it was you diverged into too many topics. Everybody loves to cover a wide ranging topics, but most people are not interested in all of those topics. So they turn it off when you hit a topic that they're not interested in. Or a lot of times, sometimes there can be a mismatch between the promise that you made in the intro and whether the show actually delivers on that promise. So that's another cause of low completion rates when the intro isn't the problem. But most, like literally 9 times out of 10, it's the intro.
And where's the best place to find these numbers? You specifically mentioned looking on the back end of Spotify or Apple. Do you recommend going to those places directly, or are there other analytics tools?
That's the only place that you can get it, because Apple and Spotify, those apps, they can see when people turned off an episode. Your hosting platform, so I'm on Megaphone. Megaphone doesn't have any idea. Megaphone only knows the device that downloaded it, where it was, and what app they used. They can't see whether they pressed play and turned it off, or listened back, or skipped any things. But Apple and Spotify, those apps have that information, and those are the two biggest ones. I like to go to Apple because still now Apple tends to be the most common one that people use. And I just find that there's more data in there. It's going to be like 40 to 50% of your audience, but it's plenty. It's enough. It's enough to make good decisions.
All right. Where are we in the ladder? Are we on the third rung yet?
Yeah. So we're on two. So now we can talk about three. And my big secret is that 1 and 2 is the hardest part, right? 1 and 2 is the part that is not sexy. People are not really thinking about. They're just throwing episodes out there. Everyone's like, oh, my content is good. It's not my content. It's my growth strategy. I'm like, your content is probably good, but it's the packaging of your content that's not good. That's not getting people in. And that's 1 and 2. It might be your, you know, we should still improve our content. But then level 3 is where we get to growth, right? Where we actually grow the show. And for someone who doesn't have level 3 locked in, right? They have good intros. They have a great premise, but they're not seeing their audience grow. That tends to be because they are promoting. What do I mean by that? Well, people tend to think, I need to go elsewhere online and promote my podcast, right? Which makes sense. How do I promote my podcast? But the problem is, when you go other places, when you go on social media, when you go into forums, wherever it is, and you promote, people hate that. It's not good. And so this is where I see people posting on social media. You know, they post a headshot of their guests, like some dude, and it's his corporate headshot. And the caption is, I had a blast talking with Dr. So-and-so on my podcast today. Link in bio. Go listen now. And it's like, you get zero likes, zero comments, no engagement, because that's a crappy social media post. Like, that is objectively not a good social media post that people like. They're not happy that came up in their feed. And so the social media platforms see that. They're like, oh my gosh, people are skipping this faster than skipping rocks. We need to not show this post to anybody, right? Because they're going to close our app if we show this person's post. And that's because you are promoting your podcast. Instead, if you want to make it so that when you show up on social media, when you show up in groups, when you show up on other podcasts, whatever it is, you get listeners not by promoting, but by participating. So the one thing to remember is don't promote, participate. Wherever it is that you are participating to spread the word about your podcast, it could be participating on social media. What that looks like is, instead of using social media to promote your podcast episodes, you use your podcast episodes to generate good social media content. What is good social media content? It's useful and entertaining. That's it. So instead of saying, hey, everyone, I had this incredible conversation, you need to go close this app, open up another app, get in your car, drive around and listen to my podcast to get this information. Nobody's doing that, right? But if you say, hey, I had Jacques on my show last week. He's an absolute expert in how to launch online courses and make tons of money with online courses. Here's the 4 main things I learned from him in my conversation. Number one, this. Number two, that. Number three, that. Number four, that. It was, and at the end, you just say, and by the way, he shared way more than that. We talked for a whole hour. So if you want the rest of that conversation, here's where you can find it. A little bit of a difference. Yes, it takes a little bit of time to put that together. But that's when people are commenting, this was so helpful. Thank you. Where can I find the episode? People are reposting it. You can do this in a number of ways. You can do it via text, right? On Twitter, on Threads, on LinkedIn. You can do it as an image carousel on Instagram, on LinkedIn, even TikTok these days. And yes, indeed, you can do it via short form video as well. And what I found is that the repurposing short form video, everyone's just like, I just got to cut clips, right? Yeah, that doesn't really work all that much. What works is if you just pull out your phone and you're like, do what I just said, where you just record yourself. You're like, hey, I learned 4 things about how to grow a course this week. Number 1, 2, 3, and 4. I learned it from Jacques. You got to hear it. I had it on my podcast this week. Let me know if you want it. Literally, that took me 20 seconds. That post will get more reach and more engagement than clips, right? Or then go listen to, and then just me putting a picture of Jacques with his LSU helmet on my Instagram feed.
Man, I love that. We do some repurposing for sure, but I need to be doing more of what you're talking about. I know one time I had this lady on my podcast who is making like $50,000 a month teaching guitar. And so I, shortly after having the conversation with her, rather than just repurposing the content, I was like, you know what? I'm going to tell her story in a very quick video. And I just said, let me show you how Lauren Bateman makes $50,000 a month teaching a guitar course. First, she does this. You know, second, she does this. Third, she does this. And then at the end, I say, I just interviewed her on my podcast. Check out episode whatever of the online course show.
100%.
Anything you would change about that?
No, I wouldn't at all. But what's key about that is, and what you need to understand is that if, let's say that gets 20,000 impressions, are 20,000 people going to go listen to your podcast at that moment? Probably not. But some will. Some are going to be like, whoa, I definitely want to hear that. And then boom, you've got them. Others are going to follow you. They're going to hit the follow button on social media, right? They're going to follow Jacques. And then you will be in their feed on a regular basis, right? From then on. And you're going to, that is the post that's going to reach people who don't already follow you because people are commenting on it. People are resharing it. The algorithm shows it, right? So while it's not instant growth, it is that type of like growth where you do that every week. It seems imperceptible in the moment. It's kind of like, you know, going to the gym. You go to the gym every day for 6 months. There isn't a day where you're like, oh my God, I got in huge shape last night. But then you look back at 6 months, you're like, oh my gosh. Like you just see the before and after. You're like, holy crap, I really lost a lot of weight. But you didn't notice it in the moment. It's the same thing with podcast growth and participating on social media in this way.
So I should have added that, like, to your point, that post did so much better than any repurposed content, right? Repurposed content, that's like such buzzword. I mean, is that, should people stop doing that and just do more of what you're talking about?
So it's funny because I feel like I go back and forth on this. So I do not believe that the clips are as powerful as people think they will be. Like what people tend to think is that I do a podcast episode, I record the video, I cut up clips, I post the clips, and then they go viral and everyone listens to my podcast. It really doesn't work that way. Social media, like short form social media, is a skill in and of itself. And so first of all, most of the clips that people are posting are not inherently good clips, right? They don't have an incredible hook that immediately get people to stop skipping videos and be like, whoa, I want this. It's just literally, it jumps right into the middle of a complete stranger talking about, they don't know what, like, it's just out of context. It's just, boom, they see a face talking about a topic. They're not sure. And they just skip it before they skip it before they even realize that they skipped it. Right. You can, I have seen some folks, particularly recently, executing repurposed short form in a way that's really, really, really well. And the key is having a great hook. But again, they'll be the first to tell you this did not translate to a bunch of podcast downloads. And I've had conversations with some of the biggest names in podcasting, names that you would recognize, who are like, yeah, we do the clips. The clips are great for growing our social media accounts, but when done right, but they don't necessarily translate to podcast listenership. It's these other types of content, what I call summary content, which is what we've been talking about, where you summarize the podcast episode, that drives more podcast downloads and listens than just, you know, throwing them into a 30-second clip of a conversation.
I love that, man. There's probably a fair amount of people listening to this that have podcasts and are getting a ton of value out of this, but I'm sure there's plenty of people as well that have always wanted to start a podcast and maybe don't know the right steps. We've already established that's not necessarily your particular niche, but I'm sure people ask you all the time, how do I start a podcast? Where do you send them?
So I just say, when it comes to the launching part, Google it. Because like I said before, you can Google how to like start the feed, but then really, like, my deep dark secret is I am Grow the Show, but a lot of times when I work with people, what we're really doing is relaunching the show because we have to go back to these fundamentals and improve these fundamentals of the show, especially the premise. Like, we need to rebrand it. We need to make it more clear. We need to change the way that you're introducing the episodes. Every once in a while, we make adjustments to the content strategy itself. Like, okay, we're not going to do two interviews a week. We're going to do maybe two per month and then, you know, but pepper and solo episodes. So the secret is, while I don't necessarily target people who haven't launched yet, like in terms of what I talk about online, I tend to attract them still. And the process is literally exactly the same. So if you haven't launched yet, you are absolutely at an advantage to the people who have, because you can go back and hit levels one and two, like we just described, get them right the first time and skip the 6 months of feeling like you're horrible and that you're putting episodes into the void and just get to the part where you see the numbers start going up. So, you know, the answer is really like, do levels one and two, establish a clear, unique premise, learn how to introduce your episodes, Google how to get a podcast feed, you know, use Megaphone or Libsyn or Transistor or any of them, get the podcast out there, and then boom, you're at the same level of most people who've just been podcasting to their friends and family for 6 months.
That sounds like amazing advice. Well, another thing that I'm learning for you from you in this conversation right now is I feel like I should be doing more solo episodes. I'm probably doing one every 3 months or so, but in general, we're mostly interview based. So you've mentioned that a few times that that's a good strategy. And I just wanted to make sure I'm picking up on that correctly, that if I'm doing almost entirely interviews, not a bad idea to sprinkle in more solo shows.
Yeah, I learned this because when I first launched Grow the Show, it was all guest episodes because I didn't realize this yet. And it wasn't until I want to say early 2022, maybe a year and a half into the podcast, I only published a solo episode because I was in a pinch. Like I had somebody cancel and I needed an episode. I didn't want to republish. And I was like, I need to put something out. So I'm just going to record something. And I, to this day, have not gotten more engagement from an episode than that first solo episode that I published, where people were like, this was amazing. Can we please have more of this? And the reason why they're so powerful is, number one, for the listener, they tend to be shorter and more punchy. There's less la-di-da, right? That's number one. So it's just like, hey, here's what you're going to learn today. Boom, you get right to the value. They're shorter, like I said before, so it's easier to listen to the whole thing. And people are listening to the show for you, Jacques. And I'm sure people who hear my voice right now are nodding along, where they're like, they love you. The guests are awesome, but they want to know what you have to say. They want to know what you're thinking about these things. It's kind of like the late night talk shows. There's not a lot of people who watch late night talk shows on a regular basis who watch different ones every night, right? They've got one. There's Jimmy Kimmel people. There's Jimmy Fallon people. There's Stephen Colbert people, and they go to that host. And by the way, what do every one of those shows begin with? A 10-minute monologue, solo episode. What does he think? What does she think about everything that's going on? That's awesome. Now let's get to the guests. So that's the listener perspective. From your perspective, as somebody who's been cranking out guest episodes, dude, we had to do a lot of work and spend a lot of time to make this episode happen, right? We got in touch with each other. We had a conversation beforehand. We scheduled. I had to ask you to schedule it when you don't usually schedule it. So you had to move your schedule around. We're doing this now. You're going to take this back. You're going to edit it. You're going to, you know, all these different things. Solo episodes, man, turn on the microphone. You rip some value. You put it out there. Your audiences email you and say, thank you. And you're like, thank you. This took me a tenth of the time it usually takes me to put together these episodes. So it's better for you too.
Amazing. You're dropping some pretty credible knowledge on us here. So I appreciate that. I could ask you 100 more questions about podcasting. And if I did that, it would probably be mostly selfish. So I definitely want to talk to you about courses, memberships, coaching programs, because I know you have those things. So walk me through maybe your current offers that you have right now.
Real quick before I do that, just for completeness, the two other ways, I mentioned social media, the two other ways to grow a show, YouTube, but you don't have to. So you don't have to. It's really powerful, but I'll say it again, you don't have to. And then number three is what I'm doing right now, showing up on other podcasts. Literally no better place to find podcast listeners than other podcasts. Level four, the podcast ladder, convert listeners to customers. Convert listeners to customers.
That would have been a much better transition into
that's all right. That's why I said, let me go back. Yeah, let me go back and not nail this transition for us. So everyone says, how do I monetize my podcast? I'll cut to the chase. That's a horrible question, because at what point is a podcast monetized? Well, when I make money. Well, who's paying you, right? Well, my sponsors. Who's paying your sponsors? I guess my listeners. Exactly. A sponsorship is your sponsors paying you in advance for your listeners to buy their stuff, right? So you can get sponsorships and do it that way, which is a pain in the neck. Sponsorships are great, that you can make them work, you know, not poo-pooing them completely. But what works, in my opinion, way better, it makes you way more money, and it's just more fulfilling, in my opinion, is getting your listeners to buy stuff from you, converting listeners to customers. So number one, level four, literally every single form of podcast monetization is getting your listeners to buy something. My recommendation is getting them to buy something that you made, which brings us to offers, right? Digital products, courses, all those things. So my offer stack is actually currently completely changing. So I can talk about what it's going to be if you want. I can talk about what it was. I don't know, like how do you want to go from here?
Let's go to where it's going, because you obviously have a vision for it. There's a reason you're going that direction. So talk to me about what it's going to be.
100%. So basically, I've had a few different offers for Grow the Show. All of them are helping mainly CEOs, founders, and entrepreneurs who have a podcast to grow their business and grow their personal brand, teaching them how to do everything that we just talked about so far. Basically, implement the podcast ladder so their show is growing every week. They're getting ROI by getting sales from the show, right? So in the past, I've had many different forms of my coaching program called the Grow the Show Accelerator. In the fall of last year, I launched the Grow the Show Academy, which is a lower ticket annual membership, right? Which gets you access to the course material, gets you a little bit of coaching. The adjustments that I'm making now is I'm transitioning to a higher level mastermind and then a lower ticket membership. There will be a mid-tier thing that has coaching. The membership is going to be, it's going to be still called Grow the Show Academy, but it's going to be your standard course material and community. Something that's more accessible, you know, for folks that maybe don't need to pay thousands of dollars to get coaching, but just want to get access to the tools, the templates, the how-to, the know-how, and of course, the online community to get some help along the way. So that's going to be the Grow the Show Academy, probably in the summer. I'm going to do that relaunch. It's going to be, you know, like I said, lower cost monthly type membership, cancel anytime. There will be a mid-ticket thing, which is the Grow the Show Accelerator, which is, hey, in addition to this, if you do want coaching from me and some other experts, you want to hop on calls and actually get some help, that will be available. But then I'm also launching, relaunching my mastermind called Master the Show, which is going to be way deeper dive with the higher level CEOs and entrepreneurs who, you know, have an established business. They tend to have teams and they're really looking to totally go to the next level and become those business influencers that lead their niche. So it's kind of a total rearrangement of my offers, and I could talk about why that is, but that's where we're heading with Grow the Show. And of course, there's one more thing that I'm doing, which we can talk about at the end. But yeah, that's what I'm up to.
sounds good. So let's talk about how you are taking podcast listeners from the podcast all the way to being a customer. Let's start with the funnel totally. In general. Are you mostly doing live launches where you then promote it on your podcast? Or is it more of relying on evergreen funnels where you're promoting on your podcast some sort of lead magnet and then the funnel takes care of the buying process?
It's the latter. So what I recommend to, like my default recommendation, because most of the folks that I work with aren't doing live launches. There are some, and a live launch is a great way to, you can live launch to a podcast audience really well. And so I can talk about the adjustments that I would make if I were live launching, but the standard and my default is by implementing what I call rotational CTAs. Rotational CTAs. What does that mean? Well, most people are like, okay, I've got this podcast and I've got these offers, but, and I'll be like, oh, great. So how many of your podcast listeners buy your stuff? And they're like, none. I'm like, what? And I'm like, okay, well, how are you promoting your offers and services on your podcast? And they're like, yeah, I'm not really doing that. I'm like, what? You've got all these people that are listening to you every week. They're hearing your voice more than they're hearing their mom's voice. And you haven't told them about your products and services? They're like, yeah, well, I don't know. I don't want to make it, you know, I don't want to make them uncomfortable. I'm like, okay, there's a way you can do this in a way that doesn't turn them off. It's by implementing mid-roll rotational CTAs. What does mid-roll mean? Well, there's three places you can put a call, and CTA means call to action for those who don't know. There's three places you can put a call to action in your podcast content. There's a mid-roll, which is where it's literally as soon as they press play. Hey, before we get to the show, you should know, blah, blah, blah. That's pre-roll. I might've said mid-roll. Mid-roll is when it's in the middle. It interrupts the content. Hey, we'll be right back to the show. But real quick, a question for you. Are you struggling to grow your podcast? Don't you wish it was a little bit easier, right? That's mid-roll. And then post-roll is at the end of the content. Thanks so much for enjoying the show. If you want more, you can blah, 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 blah. So I recommend doing pre-rolls rarely, only if you're like live launching something and there's like a limited time thing where you want everybody to go to it. Other than that, I hear a lot of podcasters who have by default a pre-roll ad that crushes completion rate. And because remember, what did I say earlier? First 60 seconds of the episode, you have one job, right? Get them to listen to the rest. If in the first 60 seconds, you're like, hey, before we start, you should go download my stuff. They're like, I don't know. I'm not going to go download your stuff. I was here for some value. I'm out, right? So I wouldn't do pre-roll. I would do it rarely. If you're live launching, great, throw it there. Mid-roll, I would do almost always. I would do usually. And then post-roll, I would always have a post-roll call to action. Usually I just do like a rate and review. Hey, if you enjoyed the show, if you ever got any value, please leave us a rating. It really helps. Ratings do help with just like the credibility of the show. And everyone always asks me, how do I get more ratings? Ask people to rate your show. Just throw it at the end. But in the middle, right in the middle of the content is what I found is the sort of Goldilocks place to throw that call to action. And that is where you send people to your lead magnets, to your newsletter, and yes, to your sales page, to your discovery call, you know, whatever your sales process is. And I call them rotational CTAs because here's the kicker. generally, usually there's like 2 to 4 things that you would want your audience to do, right? They can book a discovery call. They could check out this lead magnet. They could check out that lead magnet. They can go to your sales page for the course. What you don't want to do is throw all of that stuff at them all at once, right? If you want more information, go to my website and be sure to book a discovery call. And by the way, if you also, it's like, oh, I'm not doing any of those things, right? You give me too much. But if instead, every episode you cycle out, you rotate out your different CTAs and each one is dedicated to the one thing, that's when you really get the most people to go from podcast listener to email lead slash, you know, prospect slash buyer. Make sense?
Yes. So I have an email newsletter, a weekly email newsletter. I've got a free workshop, which is the start of a funnel. I've got coaching offers.
Yep.
So let's take those three. I could rotate those. You also mentioned, hey, leave a rating and review in your podcast app. So are you suggesting in the mid-roll, I would just rotate between those three and then always ask for a review at the end? Or do I keep the CTA within the same episode consistent from in middle and end?
Good question. What I am saying is the former, where in the middle is where you CTA your funnel stuff. So your lead magnets, your newsletter, and your sales funnel. And then at the end is where you do the rate and review CTA. Now, what I'll say is that you don't have to do it that way. There are some people who flip it and they actually ask for a rating in the middle and they do a CTA to their stuff at the end. You can do it that way. I've tested a bunch of different ways. What I found is that the mid-roll is the one that really gets the most people to convert, right? To actually join the newsletter, to watch the masterclass, to book a discovery call, whatever it is, just because it tends to be at a good place in the content. Because what happens is in the post-roll, people tend to grab their phone and turn it off, like when they sense that the episode is ending. So a lot of times they don't really get to the CTA. What I really want is for them to hear it in the middle, maximize the amount of people who hear it, you know?
It sounds like you've been in digital products for about 4 years now. What have you learned about digital products? And is there anything you would do differently knowing this now, going back to when you started?
Oh my gosh, I've done so many things incorrectly. So much I would do differently. I can tell you the few lessons that come to mind. The first one is I only learned this lesson recently. I always vastly overloaded my courses with information and lessons, like vastly, because I was like, I'm just going to give them everything I know. It's going to be the ultimate knowledge base where people can learn everything they could possibly ever want or need to know about how to grow and monetize a podcast. And what I found is that people just get completely overwhelmed. They drown in it. Like they just can't find what they need or what they're looking for. They're not sure what they should do first. So as a part of this, I mean, I told you how I'm readjusting my whole offer stack. And as a part of that, I'm completely reshooting my course material and it is going to be way shorter. And because of that, it's going to be worth way more because it's going to be something that people get way more value out of and they're actually able to implement because it's much simpler, right? So that was the number one lesson I've heard folks tell me that all the time, but I really didn't truly get it for a while. So that's number one. Another lesson that I learned is, actually I learned this from Jay Akunzo, who's a really good friend. And he shared this with me. He made this distinction. We were having a conversation on Threads, you know, which is Instagram's new Twitter. And, he made a great point that a lot of folks will jump. People who have never made an offer to their podcast audience will jump to offering them a low ticket digital product. And I always was like, oh, that's great, right? You can just get all these people to give you some cash and you can make some money, monetize the show. What he said, he's like, I wouldn't do that first because the way he describes it is a low ticket thing is a traffic offer where it's like, it's a small thing that you can get people who are completely new to you. They can buy this thing, get some value. You get a little bit of cash, but it gets them closer to buying your bigger stuff. Whereas what he says, he's like, your podcast audience already knows and trusts you so much more than literally any other audience that you have. So he was the one that said, you want to make sure that you're offering them, you have something higher ticket for them because the people who are going to be willing and want to hire you at your highest level are going to be the people who are listening to your podcast. Because again, they hear you more than they hear their family's voice in some cases. So I've always had high tickets. So that's always something that I was doing, but that really helped me better help my clients because I've certainly had clients where like we look and it's like, okay, do you have like a $2,000 offer? Okay, great. Let's offer that first to your show because you're going to get some clients and you're going to get some significant cash. then maybe down the line we can do something lower ticket. So that's a recent lesson that I learned.
One objection I get quite often is people feeling like they need to really hold back on their free content and reserve that for all of their paid content, their digital products. You've been doing a podcast for 4 years. Podcasts, they're typically long. Your shows are long. You've got a lot of free content out there. What is your take on where you draw the line on the specific content that you're putting in your behind your paywall versus in your podcast?
There's no line. So every single thing that I know and I'm learning, I share on that podcast feed. And with there's nothing where I'm like, man, if you want step number four, you got to join us in the Grow the Show Academy. No, all the information is out there. And I got this adage from Alex Hormozi. I think he says, giveaway information should be free. People give away the information, sell the implementation, right? And so what I've learned is that people, when people are hiring me, when they're buying my courses and products, they are hiring me for organization and implementation. Because here's the thing. The podcast feed, I put out an episode a week. Sometimes I put out two episodes a week. It's all just like splat, right? As it comes up, as I learn it, I share it. And so if you really want the true step-by-step level one, then level two, then level three, here's the order to go. Here's the checklists. Like here's how to make all this happen in a really organized and guided way. It's really hard to just figure that out based on 200 audio episodes that you have to listen to and try and organize and everything like that. So all the information is there. And part of the reason the show has been so successful and part of the reason this has worked so well is because I am just ruthlessly generous with the information that's on my feed. And that's what gets word of mouth. That's what people are like, oh my gosh, you got like, they're sending it to their friends. I hear people, some of my solo episodes have a completion rate that's above 100%. There's one that has 120%, which means that on average, the average listener of that episode has listened to it 1.2 times. And that's just average, right? Because people go back and they listen to it over and over again. And there are so many people who have gotten all this free information from my podcast, have grown their show to some heights bigger than mine, and have never paid me a dollar. And I love it. Why? Because they are some of my best and biggest evangelists. Those people have told 50 people that my shows exist, and five of those people have paid me, have bought my stuff. So it's difficult to put yourself in that kind of abundance mindset. It's very hard to do. And especially like when business gets tough, you know, like if you have a down month, you're like, oh, I can't be giving this stuff away. But the more I give, the more I get, for sure. And so for that reason, I strongly believe that as course creators, we should be, as far as the information goes, giving it all away, because in the course, that's where you give them the implementation and the organization. But I want to know what you think. Do you agree with that?
We're 100% in alignment on that topic. And it's mostly people that haven't experienced that have that concern the most. It's mostly the beginners that are scared to put certain content out there for free because it's no, I got to hold that back for the course. That's what people are going to pay for, right? 100%. Why do you think it's those types of people that are so scared of that?
Well, they just haven't. Well, it is scary. And what I'll say is, even to this day, I mean, I recorded a solo episode last week where I was like, oh man, I don't know if I should be giving this away. Like who's going to, like if they, like they'll just be able to go do it, right? And so I'm still scared of it. And actually I use that as a positive signal. Like when I'm finishing up a solo episode, if I have that little pit in my stomach that's like, oh God, I'm kind of giving away the secret sauce here. That's my sign that I'm like, okay, this is good enough to publish. Like this is something that should be on the feed and that is going to get tons of reach and I'm going to get emails from people. And by the way, tons of applications for my programs. I get the most applications of people who are like, all right, let's do this. I'm ready to work with you from the episodes that I am most afraid to publish because I'm showing them exactly how the sauce is just made and just giving them the secret sauce. So, you know, it's not like some people are afraid and others aren't. It's everyone's afraid. I'm still afraid to give away all the information on the show to this day. It's just who publishes and who doesn't.
Love that. Now, when you're interviewing guests on your show, is a good idea to give them an opportunity to have a call to action to their stuff at the end of the conversation?
Yes, it is.
Okay. That's what 100%. Time it is now, Kevin. Where can people learn more about you and your stuff and consume? Man, it's just been nonstop value here, and I really appreciate that. So hopefully people want to learn more from you. Where can they go and do that?
Thank you so much. So there's really two things to do. Number one is the Grow the Show podcast. And I invite you to listen to episode 3 because there's a little fun little Easter egg that you'll hear that you'll really love. It was literally my 3rd episode of the Grow the Show podcast. And there's a certain podcaster that I mentioned on that show that I didn't know at the time. And so definitely check that one out. And by the way, it gives examples of intros of great shows. So it relates directly to what we were talking about. It's basically, here's how to intro the show. So that's 1. Check out the Grow the Show podcast. 2 is April 1st through 5th. I'm actually doing my first ever live summit. I'm so freaking excited. It's called Grow the Show Live. It's specifically for CEOs, founders, and entrepreneurs looking to grow their business from their podcast. It's going to be 5 days. You think this is valuable? I am giving away the farm in that summit. But again, my first time. So pumped for it. And so if folks are interested in that, then go to growtheshowlive.com/Jacques and then grab tickets.
Amazing. growtheshowlive.com/Jacques, JACQUES. Very easy to spell, just like it sounds.
I know. I was like, damn, I got to look at the spelling like 8 times. But hey, my last name is Schmidlin, and I guarantee nobody knows how to spell that. So I feel, I understand.
Yeah. So this episode will come out very shortly before April 1st. So definitely check that out. Also, I believe the episode you're talking about is episode 4, because I listened to it recently. Okay. So just want to clarify that. Listen to episode 4 of Grow the Show, not only because of that Easter egg, but it's extremely valuable. I just listened to it. It's all about how to have amazing intros to your podcast. And I learned, I've shared that earlier. I learned a ton about intros from you.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, episode 4, like I said, Easter egg you guys are going to love, but also it'll literally teach you exactly how to do what we talked about earlier, which is to get your completion rates really, really high so that you have more retention.
Kevin, been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Jacques, this is awesome. Thank you so much. I'm honored. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks again to Kevin for joining me. Check out Grow the Show, the podcast. I listen to it myself. It's amazing. Start with episode 4, like Kevin said, and you might hear my name once or twice in that one. And also check out Kevin's upcoming live summit that he was just talking about. Basically, if you got value out of this episode and you want to start applying the things that you learned, this summit will be a much deeper dive on what you heard here today and even more actionable. And to be clear, there is a small fee with this summit. It's $97 to attend and get the replays and whatnot. But listen to this, 100% of that actually goes to me. So if you're looking for a small way to support this show and get insane value, then this may be the opportunity for you. I didn't ask Kevin to do that, and I would have promoted this event either way, just as a thank you for him coming on this podcast and sharing so much valuable information with you all. But he comes across as just so genuine and so generous, and he insisted that all of it would go to me and my business. So just wanted to be fully transparent with you all on that. You can get your ticket at growtheshowlive.com/JACQUES. For any links and show notes from today's episode, you can head to oc.show/222. Thanks again out there for listening. Don't forget to take action on what you've heard here today. I'm rooting for you.